Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Today, my guest is Sean Ambers. Sean is the author of the book, Ghosts of the Valley, in which he talks about his experiences during his time in Afghanistan. And one of the goals of the book is to help veterans with PTSD and who have experienced various traumas. And that's pretty much the goal of this podcast, too. So I think Sean's message and his book will be great for this audience. So, Sean, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, thank you. So I've been in the military for 12 years now. I'm originally from Los Angeles, California. I've been stationed at Fort Carson, JBLM, Hawaii, and now I'm currently serving at Fort Leonard Wood, where I teach MP Senior Leaders course. I've been married to my wife, Amy, for about to be 10 years here soon. No kids, two dogs, live a pretty simple life, so nothing too crazy.
Okay. So let's jump right into your time in Afghanistan and kind of what the book is about and what you've written about some of those experiences.
Yeah. So the book is essentially I don't want to make a biography. It's not supposed to be about me. It's more of a memoir. It's about certain events that happened in Afghanistan, and it's just essentially told from my eyes. The book is about leadership and resilience, mental resilience. And it is very cutthroat, raw of the combat scenarios in which we were in. Specifically, it kind of evolves around two separate missions. So just to give you a layout, the book is 10 chapters long. It's like with pictures, it's like 160 pages. It's fairly short. Leadership book that, like, I'm not General Mattis. I'm not trying to teach you a new leadership philosophy you've never heard of before and reinvent the wheel. It's literally just a story to bridge three different gaps, essentially. So, and I'll talk about those in a second, but essentially the book is 9 readable chapters. The 10th chapter is resources for veterans that provides phone numbers, websites, anything. So if they pick up the book, they have those resources. And then, like I said, it surrounds itself around two major battles. The first big battle was, I don't know if you've seen, there's Restrepo. Have you heard of Restrepo at all? The documentary?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So that's all the area I was in. The movie, The Outpost, that just came out recently on Netflix. So that was the unit that I was in, and our battle was essentially a prelude, less than 30 days to that battle, just miles away. And essentially it was about a rescue mission that went south. 8 of us volunteered to go up to rescue a pinned down, two squads that were pinned down by multiple snipers, were cut off and surrounded. And then it became, it was a successful rescue mission, but, you know, Murphy's Law kept in play the whole night. And that was when my Lieutenant Parton was killed, in which the book is kind of dedicated to, because some of my personal proceeds I get from the book go to his foundation. And then it talks about being a private when this all happened, and then leading into the second deployment, which is, I guess, the big battle. That was a major operation in which we were trying to take back the Peshawar River Valley. And long story short, is essentially 16 of us Americans that went to go save a humanitarian aid convoy that was cut off by the enemy. And we ended up being surrounded by an enemy force of 150 fighters to 16 of us. And they got within 8 feet of the vehicles, and it was just rolling grenades to keep them back on the other side of the trucks and stuff like that. So at one point, for three of us, it almost got hand to hand had they gotten any closer.
Wow. Yeah. So there's definitely some, I'm sure, some interesting stories, you know, just in terms of the combat experiences, I'm sure are very interesting to read about. Then learning about, you know, the lessons from the leadership and things like that. I think that's, you know, pretty important information, and especially the parallels between the earlier deployment, you know, as a private, and then later on, you know, the parallels between that, you know, with a little bit more leadership experience under your belt, and how that that affected your maybe your decision making process and things like that. I'm sure that that's probably you know, quite different from a young soldier's perspective versus a more seasoned, experienced soldier. And so what can people expect from this book? So if they're picking up this book and they want to read it, obviously there's going to be some talk about your experiences in the combat situation, but you know, who is the book for in terms of you know, like if I'm looking to better myself or improve myself in one way or another, you know, who's going to be the type of person who's going to pick this up and really take something away from it, who will benefit from what's in the book?
Yeah. So like I said, there's three bridges that I was attempting to kind of gap, or, you know, change that gap. Was it's supposed to be between us combat veterans and other previous combat veterans, guys that maybe who are out of the military now and are truly affected by war and have been for many years now, and they feel like, you know, especially with that transition of them leaving the service, they feel sometimes like they're alone or they're the only ones and stuff like that. So that was the first bridge that I wanted to build, was that gap between us, so that we could understand that, like, you're not alone and we could do this together kind of thing. And then the second thing is going to be, or the second bridge is going to be between us and the civilian community. So you know, teaching them what our endeavors were for the past 20 years of war. And then also between us and the future generation soldiers, you know, who, if they stay in the army or military long enough, inevitably they're going to face off with death at some point. And they can learn from our mistakes, our successes and failures, and so on and so forth. So those are the audience I was trying to reach. I try to keep things very, very, minimal, as far as I try to keep it very understanding of all three groups in my writing style, so that everyone can kind of take away from it.
Yeah, that's great. And I think those three groups are a perfect audience, you know, because there's definitely some takeaways from all of this, and especially on the civilian side, like you were talking about, where they haven't experienced combat, and they, you know, hopefully never will experience combat, you know, it's not something that's going to be in their backyard or anything like that. So, so it's something that, I think civilians, they just get what they get from the nightly news or from, you know, reading articles online or whatever. And until they hear it straight from the source, I think it's one of those things that they don't really truly get an understanding for. On this podcast, I've talked to a lot of people who are involved in different, let's call it alternative forms of therapy. So maybe it's art therapy or music or yoga, you know, horses or, you know, other animals, you know, for therapeutic purposes. And what I found is that there's no one form of therapy that works for everybody. You know, art might work for somebody, painting or photography or something like that, you know, getting outdoors and, you know, mountain climbing or something might work for somebody else. But telling a story in a written format, kind of like what you've done, can be very therapeutic for some people. Was there any kind of element of therapy in that for you in terms of writing it? Or is this just something that you were planning on doing just to, you know, help out the community with your experiences?
Well, so I can't say that originally that was my intentions. I'll have to say that I was very selfish in that. Yeah, no, it was supposed to have been therapeutic for myself. So I, you know, I'm not a writer. I hate writing. I hate reading. I'm a C average student at best. I'm not even that good at it. But, you know, for years, a lot of people who knew about these battles and the awards that came with them and stuff like that, they always kind of told me, like, dude, you should write a book. Like, it's an interesting story. It's very abnormal, especially for an MP. It's very abnormal, like, what happened. Like, people can learn from it, blah, blah. And I always kind of just took it as a compliment. But I didn't feel like being vulnerable and putting my information out there like that. So I just kind of shrugged it off for many years. And then when I got here to Fort Leonard Wood, it's my first time. I don't have soldiers. I'm an instructor. So it's like, I literally just come home at like 3 o'clock and I, you know, do PT my own. And it's just weekends, no field cycles. Like, it's amazing. So, but as great as all that is, it left a lot of open doors as far as, like, you know, when I was in the line unit, like, we were going to the field nonstop. We were doing things. We were NTC, you know, just all the things that keep you busy, and the soldier problems are every weekend someone's getting a DUI or something. So I was always kept busy in these leadership roles, whereas this is the first time I don't have that. And then next thing you know, I had all this time on my hands, time leading to me thinking about things I hadn't thought about in a long time. So I was realizing that my PTSD was evolving in my situation for the first time. And so I thought, well, I've done the therapy group sessions, individual sessions. I've done every type of therapy you can think of. The only thing I hadn't done was writing. And, you know, I thought about what people had said. So I figured, well, fucking, I'll try it. I'll open Microsoft Word. And I literally just started. It wasn't even like I didn't set out to write chapters. It literally just started from the beginning. And I just started pounding my fingers away. And then I had somebody read it. And then they were like, bro, like, you should make this into a book. Like, this is really good. And I was like, nah, like, so then I just threw chapters over the writing. And I was like, okay, that's it. Like, I was done within the book in 2 months. Like, 2 months of me writing, I was like done with everything. And I didn't brainstorm. I didn't like format things like an author is supposed to. It was completely just not normal. But it was therapeutic. It was nice getting things off of my chest and then thinking about things that had happened and then putting it into my perspective. You know, as you're reading the book, for example, like, if you have the hard copy, and let's say you're in the middle of one of the battles, it's talking about like what's going on and what I'm seeing go on around me. And then it stops and it has like these italicized verbiage. And it's actually my internal thoughts in that moment of what I was thinking. Sometimes they're serious thoughts. Sometimes they're completely smart ass thoughts. But I went back and thought, like, what was I thinking about in that moment, or things that I did remember? And I kind of put that in there. And so that's a little different, that it's like the way it's kind of narrated. But yeah, so doing all this was, it just exposed me to just good therapy. It turned into a hobby and it helped me get things off my chest. So.
Yeah, that's good. And I think there's probably a lot of people out there who might have a story in their head, or they've personally experienced some situations that would make a good story in terms of, you know, writing it out into a book. But the process of writing the book might seem a little intimidating to them. Maybe they're like you and didn't feel like they were that great of a writer. So who would want to read what I have to write, or that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm sure there's others out there who could find it to be therapeutic, just like you did. Just like you did. But, you know, they, like I said, they might be intimidated by the process. Do you have any tips or advice for people who might be in that situation?
Well, like I said, I didn't do things the normal way. Like, I didn't set out to write a book initially. You know, that's just kind of fell into place. And then I used the book as a platform to now help veterans and stuff like that. So it's formed into what it is now. But initially, I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't say I was going to write a book. So, you know, writing a book, like, if you set yourself up to write a book or do anything like that, yeah, it's very intimidating, especially that when you start researching self-developmental research on how do I write a book? And then what does that even mean? What does that entail? What do I need to do? And you start looking at all these different brainstorming ideas and charting and all this other things, like, just to format your book a certain way and then put it in Chicago style format and get it, you know, edited and all these different things, and publishing process is a whole nother beast. Yeah, it's fucking intimidating shit, but like I said, it was easy for me because I didn't set out to do that. And everything literally just fell into play, and I did things abnormally and it just worked out for me. And I'm hoping that this inspires, especially the enlisted group, Because, you know, who writes books? It's the fucking officers every time.
Right.
It's never enlisted, right? We're the knuckle draggers and the ground pounders. We're not the smart ones. We just walked into recruiting office. Like, we're not known for that. But I'm trying to defeat that stigma. Somebody who's a C average student who got held back in fourth grade because I couldn't make it past that. Like, I'm telling you, I was not the smartest in the world, but I know what I'm good at. And I know that if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do everything I can to get there. Right. And so if I can show these younger enlisted that no matter if you're a 20-year lifer or you're a 5-year contract person, when you walk away from the military, don't just put on your resume, you were a specialist or a sergeant in the Army. And that's all you walked away with. Like, cool story, bro. We all were, right. Walk away with other certifications and other titles. Right. So like now, if I decide to get out of the Army, I'm not just a sergeant first class. I'm an author. Like, I have another title that I worked for, and I used what the Army had given me to get that. So right. I hope that it encourages other soldiers. It doesn't have to be author. It could be literally anything you want to be certified in. A welder. Cool. You did that, taking those certifications that the Army can give you through the educational program and doing that and walking away with another title besides just a soldier. And it helps obviously develop their brain to be very intelligently smart, whatever it's technical capability or whatever. But I hope that inspires, you know, these younger soldiers who are like you and I, who, you know, we didn't go to college and do that cool guy route and stuff like that, you know? So.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I think people get hung up on the minutia of how to do things. Like you're saying, like, you know, do I have it in the right format? And do I have, you know, sometimes all you need is, you know, a keyboard and just start typing, you know, just start writing your story. If you're not great at typing, if you're, you know, one of those people who hunt and peck at the keyboard and you're looking for the letters and it's going to take you forever, grab a pad and a pen and just write it, you know, and
ask you can for get help. Like, holy shit. I had so many people after I had the first person read it and then it kind of formed to be at what it was. And then I committed to, okay, well, maybe I'll attempt to write a book at this point.
Yeah.
I had like dozens of people look over the work and they took the time to read it and they red inked it. And like, I needed a tourniquet for my goddamn book because it was bleeding just red ink everywhere from people just correcting it, not changing the story, just like making me sound intelligent. Like, because had I had produced it when I wrote it, oh, fuck. And then we shot them in the face, you know what I'm saying? Like, it would have just been sounded dumb. People helped me get to where I'm at. Like, none of us get to where we're at by ourselves. And this book definitely did not get to where it's at by solely me, by any means.
And that's true with anything in the military. Yeah. I mean, you have your, you know, your squad, your platoon, whatever, you know, you are doing things together. You're not just doing things, you know, solo most of the time. You're out there with a group of people. You're working as a team to accomplish a mission. And so it does make sense. Like, why wouldn't you ask for people to help out in areas that maybe you struggle with, or you might need some help with, you know? And that's life in general. I mean, you know, I might not be the best mechanic. So I go get my, you know, my car serviced at a mechanic who knows what he's doing. And like, if I'm going to screw up my car because I don't know what I'm doing, I'm going to go take it to somebody who does know what they're doing. And, you know, same thing with this, you know, writing a book or anything really creative for that matter, you know, have someone else look at it who might be stronger in a certain area than you are. And they can help you out. You know, I'm actually in the process of writing a book, which is kind of why I'm interested in a lot of the process that you've gone through. Yeah. You know, and I've gotten to a point where, you know, I have a good chunk of it done, and I gave it over to my wife to, you know, do a read over and see what she thinks. And, same thing, so much red ink on that after she went through it, you know, things got moved around and changed and everything. But, you know, really at the end of the day, it's going to help the book and it's going to make it, sound better. It's going to flow better. And it's just, an overall better end result when you have somebody else take a look at it. But you know, as far as the therapeutic process goes, you know, if there's people out there who have a story in mind, they don't necessarily have to write a book that ends up ultimately getting published and it's selling on Amazon or whatever. Sometimes just writing is the therapy in and of itself. Yeah. It's not the end result of, you know, being a New York Times bestseller or anything like that. Like that, you don't need to set your goals to that if that's not really what you want. If you don't want anyone else to read it, just write. And sometimes, like you said, just getting stuff off your chest is what feels good, and what helps people out. Anything else about the process, about your book or anything that you'd like people to know about to help them along their way in their journey?
I think we pretty much hit it all. I hope the book helps someone. And you know, I've been very transparent about, like, if someone needs someone to talk to, like, I'm not certified to be a counselor or anything. I'm just a fucking dude. But, you know, I've always given out my personal cell phone, email and stuff like that. Social media, I try to use to my advantage to reach out to people who just need someone to talk to. And if they want an unbiased third party person, my phone's always available. So, you know, I hope that people connect with the book. And then if they'd like to reach out, I always answer all my messages. So,
yeah, that's awesome. And that's kind of the almost the definition of a true leader. You know, someone who's there for people, and they're going to take care of people the way they say that they will. You know, and so, you know, answering your messages, you know, call, you know, reaching out to people and everything like that, making yourself available. That's awesome. That you're open and to doing that type of thing. What about some of the resources? You said towards the end of the book, there's some resources in the book. What are some of the resources that you talk about in there?
There's just a bunch of random ones. Like, I went onto the VA's website. I went to a couple different places. I just kind of figured, like, if I was a veteran, I need help in buying a home, where do I go? Or if I'm transitioning, where do I go? So it's a bunch of just random kind of resources. And it's not all of them. It's not a 300-page document of all these different resources. It just kind of paints a picture of different things that are out there, so that if someone picks up the book and they didn't know that this existed, well, then they could look at what I have in my book and then go do some more research, help open eyes to other things out there. So it's just a stepping stone. And then obviously there's, like, basic phone numbers, websites for, like the suicide hotline, things like that. If, like, they need help, you know, mentally and stuff like that. So,
yeah, it's always good to have those types of things, you know, right at the tip of your fingers, especially if you're reading stuff that maybe, you know, brings up memories or emotions and things like that. It's good to have that type of stuff right at your fingertips. And that's really what I like to do with this podcast too, is I talk to people who, you know, work with different organizations or whatever that people might just not know it even exist. And so by talking to people, who work for these organizations, they might bring up something that people didn't know was out there and available to them, and now all of a sudden they're aware of it and they can take advantage of those resources. So it's really good. I think that you have that type of thing in there. I think that's going to be helpful to a lot of people who might be reading this book. And I mean, at the end of the day, you know, books like this, I feel like, you know, you said it, you didn't want it necessarily to be a memoir, but at the same time, it does have some information about things that happened, you know, things that happened to you, you know, what some of your thoughts were. And I think it's really good that people, especially the enlisted people, the guys and women who are on the ground, you know, in some of these battles and in, you know, taking contact from the enemy and things like that, and not sitting way back in the rear, you know, at some desk somewhere, just hearing what's going on over the radio. You know, with the people who are actually there, I think it's important that they write their stories, because years later, these stories start to fade from our own memories. And then, you know, that doesn't really serve the next generation very well. You know, look at, you know, World War II and Vietnam and Korea and things like that. If none of those guys ever wrote down any of their stories, you know, we might forget about some of this stuff. And so from a historical standpoint, it's pretty good to have this type of information out there too, which I think is really, really great.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Sean, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. I'd like to give you an opportunity to let people know where they can go to either get in touch with you or find out more about the book, maybe your social media and things like that. And I'll have links to all of the stuff in the show notes, but if you could just let us know where they can go to find the book and you know, kind of follow your journey along the way too.
Yeah, so the Ghost of the Valley is the title of the book, and it has its own Facebook and Instagram titled Ghost of the Valley. For Facebook, for my personal, Sean Tobias Ambrose. For Instagram, it's chief_pinkmist. And then, like I said, if someone needs someone to talk to, they just message me and I'll get a hold of them. As far as the book, they can get it on Amazon, Nook and Kindle for the digital platforms. And then I'm hoping that this month or next month, we should have our audio book released, which is going to be kind of unique because, you know, earlier I talked about how the book has like italicized and it's like my internal thoughts. Well, I went to a recording studio here and I recorded all those thoughts with my own voice, and the publisher hired a guy who has like a professional voice who's going to narrate the entire book. So he'll read the book and the battles, but as things are popping off and internal thoughts come in, you'll actually hear my own voice. So it's like kind of double narrated. It's a little different. We're trying, so we'll see.
Well, that's cool. That is really cool. And I've actually been curious about that process of, you know, recording the audio book. So, that's pretty interesting. So, you know, how you have that double narrative, and with the, you know, maybe a more professional sounding voice for the bulk of the book, yeah. But then, you know, your own thoughts are actually coming from you, which is great. And I think that will, have a nice touch to the book too, when all is said and done. So that should be great. So again, Sean, thank you for joining us today, telling us about your book and the message that you are trying to get across with the book. And it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me on today.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.